Hi, this is Jerry DiPiano, and you are listening or possibly viewing the Love Mia Vita podcast. Today I'm here with my co-host, Dr. Catherine Sharif, and Catherine has guests Dr. Risa Lewis and Dr. Aldera Landry. I hope I've pronounced your names properly. And Catherine, we'd like you to lead off with some intros.
Sure, Jerry, it's good to be here today, and I'm so happy to have our guests, Dr. Aldera Landry and Dr. Risa Lewis, who are the co-authors of a wonderful book entitled Micro Skills, Small Actions, Big Impact. And I'd like to introduce Dr. Aldera Landry first. Dr. Landry is an assistant professor of emergency medicine at the Harvard Medical School and Brigham and Women's Hospital. She's co-founder of writingincolor.org and co-author of Microskills. Dr. Risa Lewis is a professor of emergency medicine at the University of Alabama at Birmingham, creator and host of the Visible Voices podcast, and also co-author of Microskills, Small Actions, Big Impact. So the first question I have for you, welcome both, is what made you decide to write this book, and was it the culmination of a project, another project?
I'll jump in and start, and we are just delighted to be here. Thank you for having us on the show. Your question is spot on, like you identified actually the nidus. So during the pandemic, Aldera and I started writing articles, and these articles were about navigating the workplace, such as writing your own letter of recommendation, fuel efficient mentorship, a compassionate email culture. And these landed well in mainstream outlets such as Harvard Business Review, Fast Company. We had one in Nature about why early morning meetings are not healthy for anybody on the team. And we call these our proof of concept that, okay, we can write and what we write resonates. And Aldera came to me and said, you know, I want to write a book. Will you join me? And she didn't have to convince me. I didn't have to think long. And next thing you knew, we were writing a book. That was about 3 years ago now. So this book is a culmination of 3 years of work. And what we know by doing a deep dive into the business self-help collection of books is many tell people to go out and do something, but they don't actually break it down into steps and tell them the how. And Aldera really explains well why physicians and medical educators in particular are really well poised to write a book like this.
When we were drafting what's called the proposal for getting an agent and later an editor, we had to think about comparative titles, comparative books that are in this space. And the category we are in is business self-help, very much so how to accomplish X. So for us, it's how to be better at work. And we looked at a lot of titles that were, you know, bestsellers and top of the charts, widely read books. And many of those were written by older, senior, cis hetero white men in corporate America, meaning they were CEOs or top consultants. And we felt like we were adding a very different perspective coming in as physicians, because we really see the physical effects of stress from work, stress from life on the body on a regular basis, but also because we are educators and we have over the last, you know, for me, decade and a half, or Risa longer, learned how to teach people to accomplish a goal. And in the clinical setting, you know, it might be something as simple as teaching someone how to hold a needle correctly when they're placing in a particular access point, like an IV, or how they hold an ultrasound when they're taking a look at the heart. All of these small things are steps that we would do to teach someone the skill, you know, hold it this way, angle it this way, move this way. And those are all small skills. And so we really understand the value of breaking things down into the most fundamental steps, because that's how you can, A, make the learning process clear, measurable, but also expose the gaps. And so when we wrote the book, we really wanted to make sure that people can identify their own knowledge gaps, their own learning gaps, their own bottlenecks, so that as they progress towards this larger goal, they can say, oh, this is actually what I'm not that good at. So let me focus on that particular skill.
That's wonderful. And, you know, when I think that when people would pick up this book and see that it's written by two emergency medicine physicians, that they might think it's a book for women doctors. Is that true?
Great question. And we are asked this commonly. So this is not a book just for women. This is not a book just for physicians. And also, people are picking up on something, and that's that we talk about three truths in the introduction. One is that time can only be spent. Another is that learning is limitless if it is accessible. And the third is the world is not equal. So that's where we're coming from. We get that the world is not equal. And what that means is when people show up to work, start a new job, start their medical training, start at the new company, not everybody has had the same background, the same finances, the same network, the same knowledge. And so we wanted to write a comprehensive business self-help book that would try to the best of our ability make no assumptions of the reader and really tell them what they need to know to be good at work.
Yes, and I love the way that you've structured the book. And looking at the table of contents, it's similar to what you described, Adara, which is take the needle, angle it this way, insert it here, like really break it down into pieces. And that makes it accessible. And I think it makes it successful for the reader to acquire these skills and identify the skills that they need to work on. I would say that this is also a book about communication. Can you comment on that?
When we were designing the book, like Risa mentioned, there were three truths, but we also talked about how none of us work alone in a vacuum, right? There is this bottom fundamental layer of the self, meaning taking care of ourselves, our physical health, our mental health, our financial health. But there's also an additional layer of taking care of the team, the people we work with, the people we support, the people we collaborate with. And then on top of that is the layer of work, so the actual tasks and projects that we are assigned or that we need to complete. And we structure it this way because we feel like that is the correct hierarchy. First, you take care of yourself and then the team, and then you are best positioned to actually complete your work. In that middle layer, and probably the top layer too, fundamental to doing those two things, you need to be a good communicator. And that's not just in the words you speak out loud, but also in how you write emails and how you deliver ideas and how you position your body when you're speaking with someone. I think there's more to the book than just communication, but I think, you know, we have a chapter on communication, and also throughout the book, we very heavily mention communication.
Yes, yes. And Risa, can you talk more about the first principle, which is time is spent?
Yeah. So I love words, and this is a bit of a play on currency. So when people think about currency, they often think about money. In this case, we're not talking about money, but we are applying money principles. So the first truth is time can only be spent. So we want the reader to think about currency as something, it's always being spent. You can't put it in a savings account and save it for later. And as emergency docs, if we're not doing one task, then we task switch to the next task. As soon as someone is triaged or dispositioned, you're on to the next task. And so it's our call to the reader that, hey, listen, we want you to think about time and how you spend it. We are going to respect your time by writing a really readable, efficient book. And also, it's not just how you spend your time, but it's also with whom you spend your time.
Yes. Can you elaborate on that a little bit more about with whom you spend your time?
Sure. You know, we all have aha moments at different times in our professional journey. I do remember residency, medical training in emergency medicine was when I had my aha moment about time and with whom I'm spending my time, because during residency training, you have very, very little control over your schedule, over your calendar, over your time. And so the places where you do have control, you have to think about how you're going to take care of yourself. And, you know, are you going to sleep? Are you going to exercise? Are you going to go out and do something social? And also the people with whom, I think, ties in our chapter one is micro skills for self-care. The reason we started the book with that is going back to the premise that we really think everything starts with the self, but also very few industries and work environments prioritize this, teach this, model this. And in fact, in medicine, we all know people basically brag about getting by on very, very little sleep, or, you know, how much they can pack into a day. And so in that chapter one, micro skills for self-care, we talk about the personal board of directors and nourishing relationships. And this is definitely a thread throughout the book about the people. And we really think it's important for health. It's actually one of the pillars in terms of lifestyle medicine is being in community. People that need to create relationships with people they trust them, that they love, that love them. And the personal board of directors is not something that we came up with, but we love the concept that in terms of navigating your work, you need your go-to people.
Yes. You know, I, as a physician, I sense that there is a lot of isolation amongst physicians. And it makes the work environment more difficult. And Adara, going through this book and reading about the communication and building relationships made me think it would make the workplace a better place, not just for the person who's reading the book, but for everyone.
There are definitely clear moments in the book where we talk about how speaking up for someone, being an upstander in the moment, for instance, is a great way to build psychological safety, not just for yourself, but for the team, and a great way to model this is how I can protect or advocate for someone else. And so definitely, I think words and actions can help create a more healthier team environment.
Yes. Yes. Jerry, did you have any thoughts?
So it is, so when we think about words and actions, they have to be synchronous, right? Because if they're asynchronous, then we lose the confidence of our team. So, you know, we use the old cliche, walk the walk and talk the talk. And I believe that's what I'm hearing. So it is very important. It's something that I embrace.
Actually, one of the things that we mention a lot in this book is the power of the pause. We have a micro skill called the power of the pause. Because if we were just to tell someone to use your words and be bold with your actions, that could actually get many people in trouble. Not all of us have the privilege of being able to just, you know, say exactly what's in our mind and do exactly what we want. And so we talk a lot about pausing and using time and even physical space on your own to recognize your own emotions, name your emotions, to check in with your personal board of directors that Risa just mentioned, your go-to people who can help you navigate your emotions and turn them into a practical, logical, reasonable response that is well-timed, using the appropriate medium of communication to the right audience. Like all of that stuff can be much more optimized if you give yourself time before you use your words and your actions. So we actually really focus a lot on trying to remove that impulsive response that many of us just so naturally get in the emergency. In the workplace. I obviously work in the emergency room, but for other people, just in the workplace in general, it's only human nature to respond to some of the things that you see and hear. But we don't necessarily want our audience to think that it is okay to share your personal internal response to everyone at all times. That wouldn't be strategic.
If I can add, we structured the book very intentionally. Someone recently described it as it's in chunks, and that's what makes it, we believe, readable. Yeah. But just circling back, Jerry, to what you shared about walking the walk, talking to the talk, every micro skill is illustrated with a story, a vignette, and Adair and I go back and forth with sharing our stories, and these are real stories. They're not made up, and we share those, number one, because stories help really you know, draw people in and illustrate the point. And also, you know, we're all works in progress and we have made errors. We've messed up. We learned later than we would have liked to. And that's why we're sharing these things. And so this is not written from a place of, we know, listen to us, we've never made these mistakes. If anything, it's one of actually vulnerability and honesty. We've made these mistakes. You don't need to. Learn from our experience.
You know, it's funny, at a time when a lot of what we see lacks authenticity, that is so important. So I'm grateful that you are sharing your personal stories as two very successful physicians in a very trying setting.
Yeah, you know, my favorite chapter is chapter 3, Micro Skills for Polished Communications. And one of the sections says, speak less, listen more, and share the stage. And I think that so many of us in our particular field are extroverted, talkative, and need to learn to listen more. And, you know, because we are rewarded when we speak up. It took me a long time to learn to listen more and like to truly listen and not to just stop and wait for someone to stop talking, right? So that is my favorite chapter. I wanted to ask each of you, do you have a favorite chapter? Adara?
It varies by the day. That is for sure. I would say we get this question a lot, and I don't think we've ever answered it the same way because of how much it varies.
Sure.
I think sharing the spotlight, so that goes under being a team player, I think is really important. Recognizing the contributions and the inclusion of your team mm-hmm. Is really important. I like that when Risa and I are, you know, giving these, having these podcasts and these talks, we always are crediting each other for each other's ideas. I think that is really, really important for the team dynamics. So I think, you know, being a good team player, standing up for your team, recognizing when someone needs your help, and sharing the spotlight, I think helps build healthier environments.
Great. And Risa?
Well, I like that you were talking about, this book is about communication. Oh, my favorite chapter is about communication. I was like, that's why. I love that. And, you know, it varies. And also, I do come back a lot to micro skills for networking because I was late to appreciating its importance. I'm a big reader, and I had read a book called How Women Rise. Mm-hmm. And the premise of the book is what got you from early to mid may not get you to the next level in terms of your later stages, the leadership positions, et cetera. And one of the action items that they suggested that people need to do more is network. And network can be really kind of creepy and superficial and inauthentic sounding. So sometimes I just use the word connection because that sounds human, that sounds heartfelt. The bottom line is I love helping people realize that they have a network because everybody thinks, oh, I'm not that networked. I don't have network. And we're like, oh, actually you do. If you grew up and you went to school and you were in any clubs and you fill in the blank, if you went to college, you have a network. You just may not be aware of it. But I think it's obviously not just, oh, I have people in my life. It's actually utilizing your network for you, for your team, for the work. And actually, this call, this podcast conversation today is an example of growing our network. Because, Jerry, it's our first time meeting you. Thanks to Catherine, we're now in each other's network. And it's just amazing. And within that chapter, the specific one I talk a lot about, and this is perfect because you just talked about extrovert, is there's networking for introverts. And briefly, I went to lots of academic emergency medicine conference for years, not feeling that the energy was my energy, and I feel very drained. And it turns out I'm not shy. I'm socially adept. I can speak in large rooms of people. I'm okay at a cocktail party of strangers. And also, I deeply, deeply identify as an introvert. I recharge, regroup in solo environments. So we walk the reader through for those who identify as introverts, and it turns out 57%, according to a Myers-Briggs study, identify as such, but workplace gatherings and mixers are not built for introverts. So we walk through ways that introverts can sort of adapt to network and not lose out on professional opportunities, as an example.
I love that because I also identify as an introvert, and one would never imagine that because I've gotten out on stage, I've been singing, I've done improv, but I'm an introvert and I am drained. And as a CEO of a company that both has prescription, and you know what this means, prescription R&D stage products, you're out there raising money all the time. So you must network in order to raise funds. And your authenticity has to come through when you're meeting with investors, but it is hard work. So I am looking forward to reading that chapter.
Right. You know, I have a sense throughout the book that it's suffused with this value that there is abundance and there's enough for all of us. And contrary to our culture sometimes where it feels like a zero-sum game, I mean, our culture at large and America, no matter what you do. And it's funny, when I first heard about your title and I looked it up on Amazon, there was your book, Micro Skills, and I was so proud. And then directly underneath it, the next business book was How to Win Through Intimidation.
Oh, no. That's exactly the culture we would like to break.
Exactly.
Yes, which is that you don't have to sacrifice yourself, sacrifice others to be successful. You can really be collaborative. You can be kind to yourself. And things will still work out.
Do you think that's more a character? I don't mean to sound sexist, but having lived in particularly in the healthcare industry, not in medicine, what I have tended to see is that women have been better collaborators than some of my male counterparts. And I'm talking history, so I'm hoping things continue to evolve. But what is your take on that?
It's really hard to make a generalization that's true, because I've seen all sides of people wanting to collaborate and not wanting to collaborate, men with men with women with, I mean, all sorts of angles. I think the most important thing for me and for hopefully the readers is to understand a good opportunity. We talk a lot about assessing and evaluating an opportunity. And within that, it's who you're working with. And if there are people around you that you're working with that feel good, that are helpful, that are supportive, that are sharing ideas. We talk a lot about sharing resources as a form of that's a form of collaboration, right? Introducing each other to your network. I think it's really important to recognize the person you're working with and if they are collaborative or not. But I wouldn't be as I don't think I feel as strongly to say that there's one gender that's better at this than that. I think it's probably more on the individual level. But maybe Risa feels differently.
I was going to add, you know, going back to that truth of the world is not equal, and Catherine, your question about women, you know, I don't know that I completed my thought to say that we do think this book will really speak to people who have at any time felt not welcome or a part of a marginalized group in the workplace. You don't have, that doesn't have to be you to actually get a lot out of this book, and also we really think it will speak to. And so back to your question, Jerry, I do think many industries have been set up for a certain kind of person, a certain demographic to succeed. And, you know, culture change happens glacially and slowly. And so what we try to do is really have people realize their agency, their personal agency in the workplace when there are those sort of norms that may go against the grain of who you are as a person.
That's fantastic advice. And I cannot wait to read this, because we've seen this, those that feel marginalized or feel that they have been treated unfairly, and it could be not just women, but it could be different diverse groups in our population that felt that they were left out of the conversation.
Yeah.
Yes. You know, the first person I'm going to get the book from, and I hope to receive the book on the day it drops, which I believe is April 16th.
Correct.
I'd like to give it to my 17-year-old daughter. And I was wondering if you thought, if there could be a micro skills for children, right? Children in middle school or high school. Have you thought about writing for them?
We've had some of the most amazing conversations with hosts such as yourselves. And we recently spoke with a 47-year-old man who could not stop gushing in a very positive about how much this book helped him immediately. He really felt this like buy it on a Friday, be better at work on Monday immediately. And he talked about sharing this with his wife, sharing it with his daughter who is early career, I think in her 20s, and sharing it with his son who's actually in the Boy Scouts. And he actually thinks that we can go really wide with the age range to which this is applicable. Directly, we haven't spoken about sort of a specific because I think so much of this is useful for the ready to, for college, the ready for work. And, you know, we had high schoolers be part of our beta reading group. And we've had high school teachers say, oh, this doesn't have to wait for college or graduate school. This would help my high schoolers.
Yeah. Wonderful.
I think the hope, though, speaking to you and your daughter or someone who's a faculty and a mentor, is that people could actually, you know, buy the book as pairs or smaller groups and discuss together. We've definitely have heard of dynamics like that where someone's going to buy it for all of their fellows and it'll be a group project to kind of work through the book together. You know, our book is very comprehensive, but in no way can we argue that it is complete. There are many things that we wish we could have added, but we couldn't because there's only so much space in a single book. But we know that as people start to have conversations and discuss the critical actions and the vignettes that they have been through, there's just going to be a lot of room for conversation, for people to exchange. Again, the idea is to exchange knowledge. We talk about this idea of learning being limitless if it's accessible, if you share information with other people, which is honestly, that is our primary goal of this book, is to share everything we have learned about navigating the workplace to other people. But, you know, we're two people. Yes, we use a lot of evidence and resources and beta readers, but we know there's more content out there. So I think it's great that you and your daughter are going to read this book together and discuss, because I'm sure you have a lot more information for her to learn from and she as well.
So I work with an organization which caters to underserved youth. And you talked about access. And unfortunately, there are students, these are primarily high school students, who don't have mentorship. They were never taught skills. And so I can't wait. I've ordered the book. I ordered it through Barnes & Noble, and it's supposed to arrive on the 16th or the 17th. Can't recall exactly which date. But I am so excited to study that. And hopefully, it's myself and several other individuals that are in the community that can impart some of this knowledge. I think it's incredibly valuable, particularly for the underserved youth, because they may or may not be able to afford to purchase your book, but people like me and Catherine and each of you can share that wisdom.
That makes our souls warm, knowing that you're going to be focusing on these groups that, yes, have limited access to the content that we put inside the book.
Yes, and I intend to use this with our leadership courses and professional development. And I want to thank you so much for writing the book. It's so way overdue. It's so beautifully written. It's so readable and accessible. And the work you're doing is going to change the world. So thank you for writing it.
Well, thank you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
And thank you for having us here.
It's my pleasure. And we want you to remember to thank Dr. Catherine Sharif, my co-host, Dr. Risa Lewis, and Dr. Adara Landry by purchasing the book, which will be available on Amazon. It's available on Barnes & Noble, MicroSkills. And we thank you from the bottom of our hearts here at FemPharma Consumer Healthcare. This is Jerry DiPiano saying stay well. And remember to love Mia Vita.